All right, welcome to Marketing Like a Mother, a podcast made for mompreneurs by mompreneurs. Each week, we are diving into mom-approved business and marketing strategies to help you grow a profitable and family-friendly business. Today, I am your host, Olivia Radcliffe, and I am here with the amazing Heidi Fiedler. So Heidi is a writer, an editor, and a creative coach. She's worked with hundreds of titles for clients like Chronicle Books and Bravery Magazine, and she helps writers find ease and joy in the creative process with writing classes, manuscript reviews, and coaching. She's also working on her own book and making space for creativity in motherhood and interviewing 100 creative mothers for her Substack, Mothers Who Make, which I love. Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk with you.
I know I just read out your bio, but is there anything you'd like to add? You want to tell us a little bit more about what you do and who you help and why you do it?
Yeah, I work with all different people. I work directly with publishers, and then I also work one-on-one with writers. And some of those are self-published writers. Some of those are traditional writers. Sometimes it's someone that has an idea for a book, but they don't know how to turn it into a book. Sometimes it's someone that's really far along in their career, but they feel like they've kind of lost their energy around it, or they're feeling stuck in some way. It really depends.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, a lot of what you're talking about is I have very shiny ideas of a million different books I want to pursue. So what you're talking about hits very home for me. Can we talk a little bit about how, if you have this kind of idea for a book, you have this little spark of something you want to do, how do you start to pursue that and turn it into a book?
Yeah, I'm in the same camp of like, I have probably too many ideas for how much time I have. And I have lots of ideas sort of kind of stored somewhere. So I think it does help to choose one idea to focus on. That's an easier, more successful way to make progress, I think. And then I think really starting very small and taking baby steps. Usually when I start a project, once I decide like I'm really going to explore this and think about it, I start a notebook, which I call it my Nebula notebook, meaning it's like meant to be really dreamy. It's meant to be like a real catch-all, like I'm not really writing, I'm doing the pre-writing. I'm gathering inspiration, I'm writing down like lists and like a word or a phrase or whatever. And I try to really take my time with that stage of things and kind of let the book emerge from that. If I go in thinking this is the book and I'm going to outline it immediately and just start writing to that outline, maybe that works for some topics or some people, I don't know. But for me, that starts to get really rigid, and it does not produce my most interesting original work. I do a lot better if I can have that dreamy, playful stage where I really don't know where I'm headed, and then I just see where I'm at after a while.
I love that. And I love kind of, you know, the thought of breaking out of such structure, because, you know, I've written a lot. I've have a lot of books in mind, like I said. And so I've done a lot of different workshops with people, and there's a lot of different frameworks that look pretty much the same about how to put together your outline for the book, how to, you know, get your chapters ready. And I do see value in a lot of that. But what you just said, like, just blew my mind and opened it up to, oh my goodness, I don't necessarily have to follow that structure completely, because sometimes it does feel a little too rigid. It doesn't let my imagination go where I want it to go. I can't just play and follow my intuition where it goes down that rabbit hole. So I love that you just said that.
I think that's really helpful. That's a great thing to do a little bit farther into the process. Like that is a step you have to take eventually to make a book that's going to sell. But I think also we get kind of hung up on like writing looks like sitting at my laptop and working in a Word document. And to me, it's like, it could be in a notebook, it could be in your voice app, it can be like on note cards, it can be while you're in the shower, it could be on a walk, like you're doing the same real thinking, like the deep thinking that's needed. And then when you sit down at your laptop, you're gonna transfer those thoughts to the paper, but it's not like that's worse or better or some, you know, like that, those are just like essential steps, and you don't want to skip that really deep step where you're doing original thinking and you're going to make something that no one else can make.
Yeah, which I think is probably also very fitting in this world of AI when I know there's so many people who get caught up in using AI's language instead of their own. And everything starts to sound the same. I swear I can read something and be like, that's straight up chat GPT.
Yeah, I've
There's
started getting
no
that feeling too, where I'm like, is this a bot? I don't know, but like, would someone load 12 adjectives into their sentence like this? I don't
right.
know.
Yeah, I think ChatGPT that uses a lot of transformative and flowery imagery and language that sometimes I read it and I'm like, that's yeah, that's interesting. But I like the thought of having that way to get out your original thinking. And I like that you're talking about doing it, maybe not necessarily sitting at your computer writing. It can happen throughout your day. You're still getting good work, good effort, good, input from what you're doing throughout the day. Because I know a lot of our audience are, it's made up of a lot of really, really busy people who don't have time to just sit for hours and stare at a blank Word doc.
Neither do I. And a lot of my writing, like the really like dreamy part, it's done like sitting outside of OT while I'm waiting for my son, or like in the little like 5 to 10 minute window between when I leave the house and I go pick him up at school. Like I turn off the podcast, I'm just like there by myself and it's quiet, and I think of one tiny nugget, or you know, solve one tiny thing and feel like, okay, I made a little progress.
That's it. Yeah, you do it. So, once you get going and start kind of getting these ideas out and on paper, what's your process for kind of starting to bring them together and forming them into something more substantial?
I personally need some time away from it. Like I like to kind of transfer everything from my notebook into a document and then start moving it around and seeing if I see something, see patterns, or like I understand what it's about. And then I usually need some time away. And sometimes I need to talk with another editor or like a friend, and just kind of sometimes describing it out loud to someone else helps me kind of crystallize what it is I'm trying
Right,
to
right.
create. Or I've even like written a letter or kind of like a journal entry as though I'm trying to describe the project to someone, and that helps me shape it. It helps me figure out, am I headed in the right direction or not? What am I actually trying to make?
I imagine having some external source to help with that would be kind of crucial because I know I can get stuck in my own head and things make perfect sense to me in my own head, and then I might be missing the point completely for someone else. So
Totally. Everyone needs an editor, and everyone gets into that place where they're like, I don't know if this is helping or hurting, if this makes any sense.
I do this thing where I start to overly explain something, like try to make it as easy for people to understand, like just get so in detail, and I look at it and realize that they probably don't need all that. I could have had it in just one line, but when I run that by an editor or someone, it becomes infinitely clear. So that's my downfall. But you mentioned, using publishers and then self-publishing as well. Do you have any thoughts on using a traditional publisher versus self-publishing versus kind of a hybrid?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about this, and I don't know that there's like a great satisfying blanket answer. I think it more has to do with who you are as a writer and as a person. If you go through self-publishing, like you have to commit to having certain skills around marketing and distribution and selling yourself and your work and running a business. And if you are going the traditional route, you're committing to a slower timetable, a more collaborative process. And there are, you know, pros and cons to both paths. And the hybrid path, I think there are some really promising options, but a lot of them require a really intense investment up front, which is great if you have that available, but a lot of people do not. And I think it's I also know a lot of people that have done like self-publishing, but where they're starting their own company that's going to publish other projects or, you know, expand in some way. So it's not just them. There's all different ways to do it. I don't feel like any of them are like the golden way. They all have sort of like struggles and also advantages too.
I could see that absolutely. I took part in a series of it was an anthology series with a whole bunch of other female entrepreneurs and amazing women, and it was great. And we loved the publisher that we were with, and then the dynamic duo behind the books kind of came together and then created their own publishing house. And so I've been kind of watching that process of self-publishing turning into a publishing company, and just the like you said, the pros and cons, the ins and outs of all of that. I find it actually pretty fascinating.
I do too. And I feel like there's a lot of people that have the creative side, but it's just such a big commitment to, you know, build a business or to take on inventory or, you know, figure out all these components to it, that holds them back. And then there's other people that have maybe the other side where it's more entrepreneurially driven, but they don't have the background in publishing or working with creatives. And so it's hard to marry those two things all in one person. I think most people tend to have one strength or the other and struggle with one piece or the other. For me, it's I don't want to spend my time doing distribution and marketing, even though, you know, that's a part of my job. I don't want it to be the focus of my job.
Absolutely. I think that's important when you're making that decision of how you want to move forward with your book and figuring out what your strengths are, what you're willing to do, what you really don't want to do, and then finding people to fill those gaps, like finding an editor, finding someone to help, pull those ideas out, finding someone to help with the distribution or the marketing or the publishing or, or someone to take care of all of it. Maybe if you just wanted, you just write and then send it. That's great. So on your website, you have a lot of children's book stuff. Can we talk about writing books for children and what that process looks like?
Yeah, I've come from children's publishing. That's been the majority of my work, and I've only just started to work on adult nonfiction. And I love reading children's books. I love working on them. I love the illustrations. I love creating something that I know can like really mean something to someone for their entire lives. Like they, you know, everyone knows that feeling of like the book that you loved. And then you pick it up again like 20, 30, 40 years later, and you're like, I just remember this book. It's like in my cells still. And I think it's really, really a privilege to get to work on something like that.
Awesome. I know I my son and I have a 3-year-old. We read a lot. We go to the library and we load up, and he has definite favorites that I have to reread over and over and over again. And I have definite favorites and definite least favorites that I just kind of hide and tuck away, those least favorite ones where, like, please don't make me read that again. Oh my gosh. And so I really appreciate good children's books that have good lessons, good morals in there, but it's not so saccharine and so super hard for me to read over and over again. And I think it's an art form in itself to write good literature for children, because you're not only writing for the children and their growing minds, you're writing for the parents who are inevitably reading that to their kids too over and over again. So.
For sure. And even if it's not a rhyming book, I think it's really similar to writing a poem because every word counts. The word count is so low. I think sometimes if you've been doing some other kind of writing, you can kind of think like in the back of your head, oh, I could write a children's book. Like it's just like less words, right? But it is so carefully constructed and every word matters. And there is this whole different world that you're entering when you start writing children's books.
Yeah, absolutely. I personally like the ones that add in a little bit of humor into it also. But all right, so What if there is, have you ever worked with maybe an adolescent or a kid who wanted to write a book?
Ever so often, I actually would love to do more of that. Like I think we need more kids' voices, like being able to communicate directly to other kids. I think that's a missing part in the market. And I love, like sometimes Scholastic newspaper or something like that. They'll have like kid reporters or people, younger people that are able to communicate to other young people about things they care about. I think we kind of have missed that, but usually that's like a project where someone is working with their parent. It's very rare that a child is working all by themselves on it, but I would love to see more of that out in the world.
As my niece, she has cerebral palsy, and she has been writing this series of stories about a young girl with cerebral palsy, and so she's getting her experiences out in the world, and she desperately wants to publish them. And so I've told her, okay, we will get this done and publish. So we're gonna have to look you up here when
That's
she
amazing.
gets your help editing. But I do think maybe the editing process is a little bit different. I do think it's so important for them, like you said, to get their words out there and start to give them that experience and boost their confidence in having their voice and being able to share their voice. But the editing experience, I imagine, is a little bit different coming from a child writing versus.
Yeah, but I also think like everyone's vulnerable as a writer, and it is I think sometimes there's like a stereotype that an editor is coming along and telling you like with a big red pen like this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. And like there might be some of that later in like a copy editing phase, but I'm a developmental editor, so I'm really focusing on character and plot and theme, and I'm trying to understand from you, like, what is your vision? What do you want to leave the reader with? And then looking at the story, is it doing that? And if it's not, how can we get it closer to your vision? So it's not about, what's wrong. It's about trying to understand how can we make this story the best it can be, and how can it be your story, the story you want to tell.
I love that you said that. It's not about what's wrong, it's about making it your story. How do we get your story out there in the best way possible? That's perfect. Can we talk a little bit about your book you're working on?
Yes, I have been working for a while on a book about making space for creativity and motherhood and how we can do that, and also why it is so nourishing, and a little bit about why creativity is so, it's like extra important during the mothering years. Like our lives are so intense and there are so many demands on us. It's really easy to lose your voice or just your vision. And I think having some kind of creative practice, it doesn't mean you need to write a book. It just means like you give yourself permission to do little creative things throughout the day or your life. And that can go a long ways.
Absolutely. I've definitely been making it a point in my own busy day to try to add in some creativity for my son, but also for myself, because I realized that I had kind of let myself slack on all of that. And I love the writing. I love doing artwork. I love painting. And I realized that in my busy go, go, go kind of hustle culture of running the businesses and being the mom and doing the homeschooling and all this stuff, that I lost those things. And trying to incorporate that back into my daily life has been, it's been amazing. It's like little therapy sessions built into the day, and it makes me feel so much better when I can stop for just a few minutes and paint and incorporating that into like the homeschool exercises or, stuff I'm doing with my son. He's really developed a love for being creative and trying new things. And I've seen him blossom with that as well. So I think you're definitely onto something there. I can't wait to read your book.
Thank you. Yeah, I think also we don't give ourselves enough credit for how creative we are just invisibly. Every time you solve a problem or you tinker with a recipe or you take a different route to work, and you're like looking around and thinking, oh, that's a new building, and that reminds you of something else. Like, all those moments are the same, like, skills and mindset that you bring to making art and doing these more classically creative activities. But you need to have that mindset in the rest of your life to be able to access it when you actually do want to make art.
I love that. So how do you advise people, busy people throughout the day, to kind of tap into that creativity and notice when they're using their creativity?
Part of it, I think, like, abstractly, is thinking of yourself as a creative person. So kind of noticing your own inklings and curiosities and giving yourself permission to like take a few extra minutes and research something you're just wondering about, or notice that you like the colors in your office and that brings you joy. Like, just paying attention to what you prefer and what you are drawn to, that really matters. I think we kind of like shut that down sometimes, but those are your aesthetic preferences and they will translate to your work. And also, it's totally fine to not be doing anything creative, but you can still bring that spirit to like the way you get dressed, or like making a cool playlist that really energizes you, or maybe it's like a conversation that you have at dinner, but you play a little game, or you make up a game with your kids while you're on a walk, or whatever. Like, those moments all count, I think.
I love that. I love that. And what can people expect when they can start to embrace this creativity and see it throughout their days? How would their life change?
I think you start to build on it. You see more opportunities for creativity, and you have. It seems like this is going to take energy, but it actually gives you energy so that it makes you a little more resilient, kind of softens some of those hard edges that come when life is really intense. And it gets you ready so that when you do have that book idea, or when you have like a song melody or whatever, you don't just write it off and think, I don't have time, I don't have energy, I can't possibly do this. You're like ready to do it then after you've giving yourself a little bit of a runway to get there.
Yeah. I imagine it also really starts to boost your confidence too, instead of, because I know that's something that would hold me back a lot with, like you said, the classically creative things like sitting down and painting, but also just with other just normal day-to-day creativity stuff, is feeling like, well, that's outside of the box. What if I mess it up? I'm not going to be perfect at it, something like that. Imagine once you start to kind of flex that creativity muscle and practice it and see how you're doing it, and kind of give yourself that hype file of all these things you are doing creatively throughout the day, you'll start to believe in yourself more, boost your confidence, and take bigger steps and do bigger things and be bolder. So.
Yeah, I think we're all really good at like turning these things that are pleasurable and like could be like the highlights of our lives into shoulds. Like, we suddenly feel like we should write a book, or we should be writing however much each day, or we should be doing this certain drawing exercise every day, or whatever. And like, as much as you can, like, pull back from that instinct and tell yourself you get to do it and you already are doing it. Then you start to see possibilities around you. And I think part of it too is like just believing it's possible that you might write a full book 5 minutes at a time or 10 minutes at a time. If you don't think that's possible, well, then you definitely are not going to write that book in 5 or 10 minutes at a time. But if you can imagine a world where like you might just take those little notes wherever you go, you start seeing opportunities and it feels really good.
Yeah, I like that, shifting from I've got to do this thing to I get to do this thing, and feeling that appreciation and the gratitude for that opportunity you have to grow and see where that takes you. So, all right, any last minute bits of advice for the listeners?
I would just add that I've had a creative career for many years, probably my whole working life. So it has looked creative from the outside, but I only have felt inside that I'm creative for maybe the last 5 or 10 years. And there was a real shift when I became a mom, and it felt like it mattered way more to me suddenly, even though I had less time, less energy. I really wanted to work on my own projects, and it felt really good to have something that was all mine. And now, 6 years into it, I can say that was really worth it and maybe life-saving for me.
I know there's a lot of people who are out there who struggle with feeling like, well, I can't do that because I'm not creative, or I'm not the creative one. I'm not artistic. I'm not, musically inclined. I can't write. They put those labels on themselves and kind of fall into a box and then have trouble getting out of that box. So how do you recommend people kind of embrace their own creativity level and see that they do have that creativity inside of them?
I think part of it is noticing it in our kids, honestly. Like seeing my son, he's autistic, and he's not drawing the way that someone else would. Like that's not a strength for him, and or an interest. But he is taking like tiny pieces of plastic and making these like really elaborate, almost like mandala shapes, or like he loves lining things up. But it's not just about it being in order. It's like the actual aesthetic of a long line. He loves that. And seeing that has really opened my eyes to there are so many different ways to be creative, and seeing him problem solve. He has so many things that don't come easily to him, but he figures out his own way of doing it. He has his own approach. He combines words in really original ways. All of that has broaden my view of what creative work is and what's possible for anyone. Maybe you don't think you're creative, but you have a beautiful garden, or you draw mazes while you're talking on the phone or whatever. Like everyone has something.
Well, and I think pretty much every mom has to be creative because you're always problem solving and figuring things out. And, even just figuring out, okay, why is my kid crying? Because I cut the jam on my toast and I was only supposed to cut the toast, not the jam. How do I solve this situation and stop the crying? And there's lots of creative problem solving and working through issues and going over hurdles that happens, I think, when you're a mom and as an entrepreneur as well. There's always another hurdle to
Yeah,
tackle.
there's a
So
lot of crossover between the invisible work we do as moms and as entrepreneurs and as artists. And
yes.
it's really easy to not give yourself enough gold stars because no one sees what we do, but we are doing a lot.
We're doing a lot. Yes. So embrace that for yourself. See how much you're doing. Embrace your creative side. See what you're doing as creative and see where it takes you, I think. But, all right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Heidi. I really appreciated our conversation. And thank you all for joining us this week on Marketing Like a Mother. If you found value in the show today and want to support some fellow mompreneurs, we'd really appreciate a rating or even just telling a friend about the show. And we'll be back next week with more marketing tips for busy moms with businesses. Until then, take care.